6 minutes after the hour of 12 noon Central Time, Tuesday, July 5th, 2022. Dave Prieger with you. Hope you had a nice Independence Day. Most places in Texas, of course, or anywhere there was a drought, probably banned fireworks, but that did not stop a lot of people. Yeah, they were out there shooting them off. We could hear them late at night out there in the hinterland up in the hill country. Yeah, we heard them out there shooting off fireworks. Yeah, they obviously ignored the burn ban and just decided, yeah, whatever. You know, they're not going to ruin our fourth. That's all right. Whatever. I still hope you had a good time. We barbecued ribs on the grill. Don't know what you did. But we're going to shift gears here. We have a guest with us that just put out a book. And it's only been on the market a couple of months. Started on Amazon. Now it's, you know, pretty much wherever most of your books are sold. And it's called Finding Washington, Why America Needs to Rediscover the Virtues of Her Most Essential Founding Father. Now, you have to understand, Richard Raines, who is with us here, is a professor of Christian theology, Christian history, and world religions. He's a former CEO and former elected commissioner in the state of Georgia. Georgia, you know, where they have the best peaches. Yeah. And it's really amazing because if you ever drive through Georgia, which we have, and you're driving on I-95 or 75, and you stop at one of these rest stops, there's a picture of Tom Hanks, or his statue, rather. You get to sit next to Tom Hanks and have your picture taken. It's kind of unique. But the thing is, with all of these credentials, he probably has the inside scoop on George Washington, his faith, the events from his life, many facts, factoids most of us probably have never heard before. We're going to try to get to some of those during this hour. Richard Raines, welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Hey, Dave, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. And listen, Georgia doesn't just have the best peaches. We have the best college football team in the nation as well. Don't forget that.
I knew the Bulldogs were going to come into this. I knew that. I knew it was going to come into that. Hey, there's nothing wrong with being loyal. Is that your alma mater, by the way?
It is not. I wasn't nearly smart enough to get into University of Georgia. I guess it was because I skipped 31 days of school my sophomore year, and that had a negative impact on my grades. And so when I decided to go to college, I went to a college that didn't ask questions. They just loaded me up with remedial classes to make up for those bad grades in high school. So I did not go to the University of Georgia, but a lifelong Bulldog fan.
Well, you know, at least you're honest about it. And, you know, there's a lot of people out here, and my wife and I were having that conversation yesterday, and she said, well, if you could go backward or forward in life, where would you go? I said, I probably would go back to 1971 and try and redo some of the mistakes I made. And then when I get to, like, into the 80s, late 80s, like 87, just all of a sudden, just shift and come back to the present. Because it probably could have changed a lot of negativity and things, you know, mistakes we made. We all make mistakes. That's the one nice thing about it is being able to admit it and talk about it, which, you know, that inspires people. Obviously, Richard, you wrote a book based on this, and you did, from the looks of things, a hell of a lot of research. And here's something that in my show notes, you say, I think you and your audience will agree with me that culturally America isn't in a good place, which is why you wrote the book. I guess that was the inspiration, right?
Absolutely. So a bit of a story, not a long story, but it really all started with the 2016 election cycle. I've been a Republican since I was at least old enough to understand the differences between Democrats and Republicans, and really conservative more than Republican. And I'm sure your audience probably gets that difference. But in fact, I'll tell you, when I first ran for office, my Facebook page said I'm darn near libertarian. And one of my opponents in the Republican primary didn't know what a libertarian was. And so he ran an ad in the front of a paper, said Raines is darn nearly a libertarian. And what he didn't know is that garnered me about half the votes of the conservative population in Lowndes County, Georgia. But so in 2016, when the presidential primaries were over, we were left with two candidates. And from my perspective then, and I will say this before I say too much too many other things. I think Donald Trump ended up being a much better president than I thought he would be in 2016. Didn't support him in the primary, but at the end of the primary process, we were left with a traitor that destroyed phones with hammers, and then a guy that I didn't think I could leave alone in the room, my daughter. And so this you know, introspection through that political process, I'm very involved in, you know, politics and things like that. I thought, here I am, an evangelical Christian without a candidate to vote for not the first time. So really, you look around, and I think that there are many ways to define American culture. And I'm not talking about American culture in terms of who we are at our core, in terms of liberty-loving and things like that, but our society. We're a very vulgar society. We're a very narcissistic society, very selfish society. I think we are a society that is defined by feelings and not thoughts, or at least feeling our way through issues and not thinking our way through issues. And so that led me to looking into our past, which I teach history of Christianity to college students. So I love history. I love American history. You know, who in our history can we look to? And started with George Washington and never got off of George Washington, because the more I researched, the more I realized that, in my opinion, he is the essential American, not just historically, but from a virtuous perspective. And so all of that storm of immorality really led me to look into our past and write a book about George Washington, about some of the things he did, some of the things he experienced, some of the virtues that he displayed in those historical moments. And then I try to make a case for how we can adopt some of those virtues and why I think becoming a more virtuous society will get us back onto a correct path. So that's really the book, Dave.
Well, that was quick and encapsulated. I'm just kind of like looking at this whole scenario and thinking to myself, you know, everybody referred to Washington as the father of our country. And past that point in talking about the cherry tree, and we don't know, was that an actual factual story? Did he actually chop down a I cannot tell a lie. I mean, you know, there's some things that we're taught in school, and you just got to wonder about that. You know, when people ask, what do you remember George Washington? What do you remember about him? That's one of the first things that comes to out of the mouth of somebody is, oh, yeah, well, he chopped down the cherry tree. And I'm like, you just focused on the only negative thing he did. What about all the stuff he did during the Revolutionary War? What about the fact that he really didn't want to be president? I mean, there was a whole lot of things I think people just kind of got shortchanged on in history class. So I'm glad you're teaching it, sir.
Yes. So I can tell you definitively that the story about chopping the cherry tree down was completely fabricated, and it was fabricated for selfish reasons. When Washington died, everyone was jumping on the bandwagon to write a book about George Washington, and so that story was sensationalized to sell books. There were plays that were written about him, and people would go to the theater, and they would see plays. And when you say he is the father, now listen, I went to public school, so we probably learned some of the same things, right?
Yep.
And so other than he's the father of our nation, to be honest with you, Dave, I don't even think I knew what that meant until I started researching this book. But when we say George Washington was the father of our nation, I don't think we quite grasp the totality of that. And it was literally George Washington that got people together at Mount Vernon to talk about the need to abandon the Articles of Confederation and have a constitutional convention. The Constitutional Convention did not start as a constitutional convention. The Constitutional Convention started as states getting together to talk about building a canal to connect the Potomac River and the Ohio River, and George Washington was the head of that commission. And from there, he and, you know, a bevy of others, you know, Hamilton and Madison, got together and convinced the states to come together for a constitutional convention. And from that, we got away from the Articles of Confederation, and we had a constitution. And so at the end of that constitutional convention, they made George Washington the president of that convention. He was the only choice for president of that convention. He was the unanimous choice for the president of that convention. He presided over it. He literally presided over the writing of the Constitution. And so when everything fell into place, as far as the states were concerned, the only choice was Washington for president. So we would, I'm not saying we would still operate under the Articles of Confederation. I don't think we would. I think we would be multiple small nation states more than anything else, which is kind of what we were during the operating under the Articles of Confederation. But certainly the Constitution that we have now and the form of government that we have now, I don't believe would have existed without Washington. Perhaps someone would have come along and would have built that same system. But, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, you can't really predict those things. But when we say he's the father of the nation, Dave, he is literally the father of this republic.
And I'm glad you referred to it as that. Because, see, I think a lot of people, and I just read a story about Sheriff Boyd down in Goliad County referring to this nation as a republic. But yet every single congressperson out there can't get that D word out of their mouth and distort. It's, I mean, the word is democracy. To me, that is where America has gotten off on the wrong foot. Because we are supposed to be a republic. That's what we raise and put our we salute the flag and we put our hand on our heart and we teach about the republic. And I think that's half of America's problem is we've gotten away from what America really was supposed to be. What's your comment on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. And one of the things I write about in the book, I identify all these virtues. And the last virtue that I identify that Washington displayed is hope. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. When we were at the when they were at the Constitutional Convention and they were trying to get all the wording just right and they were trying to get, you know, all the kinks worked out and you had large states versus smaller states, northern states versus southern states, right? Slavery was an issue. And Washington, who was not a public speaker, not confident, he wasn't as educated as the people around him, so he lacked a little he was a little self-aware of his lack of education, so he read a lot. Wasn't a very prolific speaker, but when he did speak, everyone listened. I don't know if you remember the E.F. Hutton commercials. Some of you probably remember though when E.F. Hutton speaks, right? So Washington stands up at the Constitutional Convention in the midst of one of these struggles, and he says, "To please all is impossible, and to attempt it would be in vain. The only way, therefore, is to form such a government as will bear the scrutinizing eye of criticism," and here's where we fit in, "and trust it to good sense and patriotism of the people to carry it into effect." So what Washington did, he stood before the Constitutional Convention, he said, "Guys, we're doing our best. At some point, we have to hand it off to a future generation." And I think that as much as maybe I am responsible for maybe my little corner of the world and maybe people not understanding the form of government we have, I think there have been previous generations that have just conceded the language. And I am not for conceding language because language is how you communicate and words mean something, right? So I don't use the word democracy, right? I use the word republic because that's what we are. And there's a difference between a republic and a democracy, a lot of differences. But I would say the primary difference is in a republic, the goal is equal opportunity. And I would say in a democracy, the goal is equality across the board, right? Everybody voting on everything all the time and everything has to be equal all the time. Well, that is not the form of government that we have. And when you try to force that everything equal all the time into the form of government we have, you're going to have tension, you're going to have conflict, and it's not going to work. And so the only way to make that work is to change it from being a republic to being a democracy. And I think you've got enough folks like Richard and Dave that are willing to push back against that. And a lot of people, I think, willing to push back against that. But one of the things I think we're doing is I think we are losing the culture war. I don't think we've lost it, but I think we're losing the culture war because, listen, Dave, peaceful people will concede what they determine to be non-essential issues in order to have peace. And I think that peaceful people have conceded small things, and the people who are demanding those concessions are bolder and bolder and bolder until we're finally in a place where peaceful people are not willing to concede anymore. And the side that constantly tries to force concessions are beside themselves. Listen, I thought Donald Trump was a great president. We saw Roe versus Wade overturned. I don't know how you feel about that, but I don't think you could, you'll never be able to take that away from President Trump. He's the one that put those justices, as many conservative justices as we've had through the years. It was this guy that I didn't even support that turned out to be the most conservative as far as placing justices. So you can't really remove that from him. But one of the things I think the reason they hate him so much is because he's not willing to concede an inch, because he understands if you concede an inch, then they're just going to, this tidal wave is just going to keep coming for peaceful people trying to work their jobs and raise their kids and go to church and go to synagogue. And they're just trying to, you know, go on vacation and be able to afford gas for their car and things like that. And so, so I think that what Washington showed us was that, you can't concede your virtues. And even in the face of almost certain defeat, however you want to define defeat and whatever, you know, whatever position you want to put yourself in where you are, in a struggle against another ideology, what Washington never did was concede his virtue. And in doing so, he was the most bulletproof figure in American politics. Now, I do discuss in the book, Washington as a slave owner, because I do think, as a historian and as someone that tried to look at Washington as objectively as possible, is I do think we have to wrestle with the question as to how can you say George Washington is a virtuous person if he owned other humans? I think that's a good question. Not just a good question. I think it's a necessary question. And so I even addressed that in the book. And I think even after looking at the sort of a comprehensive view of his life, including the fact that he was a slave owner, I think you walk away with a picture of Washington as someone that Americans should revisit and emulate. And hopefully people will read the book and they'll agree. Throughout the book, I give my email. It's richard@findingwashington.com. And I ask the readers to communicate with me, because I don't want to just write a book. I want to start a conversation, and I want to start something that maybe outlasts me.
Well, you've started a conversation here, Richard. I mean, it's getting very intent, and it's deep. And so this is a thing. You know, those of you who have political leanings that understand how this country was founded, I mean, based on the virtue. And I want to talk a little bit about, when we come back after the break, because we're about 4 minutes away from taking a break. When we come back, you know, I want to talk about a lot of other things that Washington probably be turning over in his grave, and what your take is. I guess I could start this conversation. For those of you, 844-769-2944 is our toll-free number if you want to chime in on this and clear up any misconceptions because of Richard's research on all of these things involving George Washington. And this is how stuff gets started, because the society that doubts has self-doubt. You know, we've had a lot of self-doubts. We all have shared that same commonality with President Washington. Even though, you know, people say one thing in school and you might have learned one thing in school, when you start deep diving into the history of this country and you wonder, based on his virtue, this is probably what led him and led the country to make him the general to lead our Continental Army. Would you say that probably was the key thing, is his virtue that led that and made that happen, Richard?
I think that is unmistakable, Dave. He made a statement at the Constitutional Convention about what he thought we needed to do without ever opening his mouth. And as a result of that, he was the clear choice. Now, granted, to some degree, he was the only choice for to lead it in that room because no one else really had any military experience. But Washington's integrity and his decision at some point in the Constitutional Convention to put on his military uniform and show up to work every day without saying a word told all of those people, some of the smartest people to have lived during that era, by the way, that not only was he ready for a full break, but he was ready to do his part. And so, yeah, no question, it was his virtue and his integrity that helped the Constitutional Convention to make the unanimous decision to put George Washington over the Continental Army.
And see, here's the thing. Then Ben Franklin walks out, and this lady, supposedly, as the story goes, asks him, what kind of government have you wrought for us? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. Now, did you research that in particular? Did that actually happen?
So I didn't research that in particular, but I am familiar with that story.
Yeah.
I think that came a little later, though, because the Washington had an idea, and I don't want to go over for the break, but Washington's idea was a republic from the beginning, and he fought with the Constitution. He fought with the Congress, Continental Congress, to utilize more central power than they were willing to do, which led us to the Articles of Confederation. But yeah, probably you and I should probably have a discussion about federalism and what his role was in the creation of that.
Yeah, that would be a good thing, because I think people, they have to understand he was a federalist, which called for that kind of a centralized government. But the thing is that was a government by the people, and that's what it ended up being. And I think this is where America has seriously gotten off track, because they're letting everybody in Washington make decisions for them rather than being more actively involved in government. I think all of this is set to change in November of 2020, or 2022 rather, excuse me. We will be back with Richard Grains taking your phone calls. I know you got questions out there. Richard's done the research. Now's the time to speak up, folks. We're here on the Power Hour. Dave Krieger with you. Stay with us. We will be back after this short break.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone, or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com, or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors, and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, You know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
One minutes after the hour of 12 noon Tuesday, July 5th, 2022, Richard Raines with he's on the phone with us. Finding Washington, Why America Needs to Rediscover the Virtues of Her Most Essential Founding Father. And because of the fact that he is currently teaching this stuff to college students, this is different from this liberal education that people are getting out there, which is pretty much turning a lot of these younger kids. And I've noticed a lot of them protesting, especially at these abortion, pro-abortion rallies. My whole thing with these people is that if their parents actually took on the attitudes that these people out there protesting are taking on, they wouldn't be there protesting because they would have been aborted. You know, this country is all of this Generation Z and prior to that, these millennials, I think they're liberal education has gotten the best of their thinking process. This is not what our founding fathers intended, is it?
No. I think that goes without saying, no. I don't think, Dave, that they imagined the state of things. And I think it boils down to, and I hate to just keep beating the same drum, but this is genuinely what I think is a problem. I think we have a cultural morality problem. We have a lack of virtue, and I just don't think that they had any way of foreseeing that that immorality would be the new new virtue. Lack of morality would be the new virtue. Lack of any respect for providence, which is another word Washington used for God, would be what gets you ahead. I certainly don't think they envisioned public education, and I don't think they envisioned entitlements, and they didn't envision even though they wanted a strong federal government, they didn't envision the federal government being able to regulate every part of your life, right? So no, I don't think they would have been for it. I think if they were to get in a time machine and go forward, they would probably go back and rewrite the entire Constitution to try to avoid some of this stuff.
Well, see, this is the scary thing that we were talking about during the break, folks, and that's why your input, if you have questions, this is the time. You're talking to a college professor that teaches Christian theology and Christian history and world religions, all right? Understand that, you know, when we give you the number, 844-769-2944, it's not just to call up and, you know, pontificate what beliefs there are. You are in line here in our thinking, and this is critical. This Article 5 nonsense that's going around right now, and I look at this with bated breath, and we're talking about the Article 5 Constitution Convention. We're talking about the Convention of States campaign that's going on right now. I think they've got like 19, and they're working on 20 states. They need 34 to open up the Pandora's box. Now, folks, politically, I majored in poli-sci in college as well as journalism. Did a little time, spent time in medicine. The thing that I look at is when you're dealing in a situation like this, where we have this more perfect union or trying to form a more perfect union, our founding fathers designated what we have currently on the books. We have added all these amendments to it, and now we want to basically get a majority of the states together to open up what could be a Pandora's box. And I want to, from a historical perspective, ask Richard about his viewpoints on where this could, I'm afraid it's going to go sideways. What's your take on it?
I think it potentially could. So you need 34 states, I think, to call a convention, and 38 can ratify the changes, right? If I remember correctly, it's been a minute. And so I've had somewhat of an evolution on this through the years. I read a book by Mark Levin, several years ago called The Liberty Amendments, where he was saying, hey, if we ever have a constitution of states or a constitutional convention, here are the amendments we should consider. And that's what the whole book was about. And we've had states since then. Now, there's a time limit on it, though. So if I live in Florida now, let's say the Florida General Assembly votes to enter into a constitutional convention, there's a sunset on that, but I don't remember what it is, 7 years, 10 years, something like that, to actually put the constitutional convention together. But more to your question, the quote that I read by George Washington a little earlier, where he said that the future must have the good sense and patriotism to carry this republic forward. Quite honestly, Dave, I don't think we have enough people that would be responsible for voting on these amendments or putting this commission together. I certainly doubt their patriotism, and I strongly doubt their good sense. So I just don't think it's the right time, and I would not be in favor of it at this time. I think that there are other ways to change things, but I don't know that I support a constitutional convention at this point, because I don't think you would get a better system, because I don't think the system is the problem, Dave. I think that what we've done to pervert the system is the problem. I think federal government overreach is the problem. I think, you know, you go all the way back to, what was it, 30s, when they were trying to regulate the growth of grain, and this farmer grew more grain than they thought it should grow, and made it to the Supreme Court, and that's where we get this whole interstate commerce clause, or the rule, the Supreme Court ruling on interstate commerce, which basically changed everything. And as someone who was in local government, I was a county commissioner in Georgia, I don't think the average person realizes that when the federal government says, hey, here's some money for roads and bridges, but you got to do X, Y, and Z. We want you doing these things over here with education or whatever, or we're not going to give you money for roads and bridges or things like that. So I just think that the overreach of the federal government has caused more problems than anything that is inherently potentially wrong with the U.S. Constitution. Now, the U.S. Constitution was written by people, and people, according to my religious belief, have a sin nature. So it is not a infallible document. It's not on par with whatever your religious sacred text may be. But it is the best the world has seen at promoting liberty among people. And so I would not be in favor at this point of doing that. And quite frankly, I just don't think, I mean, the founding fathers had an opportunity to go back to the board, right? You had generations of people that have had an opportunity to go back to the board and to fix this. And I think the fact that what we have with the amendments that we have, particularly the Bill of Rights, right? When I say what we have, I'm talking about the Bill of Rights and the text of the Constitution, it has endured for a couple hundred years, so I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem lies in overreach of federal government. I think the problem lies, frankly, with how profitable it is to be in politics and where that pushes your loyalties. I think the problem is with the tribalism that has emerge in our country, where we can do whatever we want, but if your tribe does the same thing, it's bad. So the problem's not in the system. The problem is what we've done to pervert the system.
Well, I agree with that. And see, you even, this is the thing about this book that we're talking about here, Finding Washington. You bring up, Richard, a lot of personal stuff, and you try to interpersonalize history with a perspective of what happened throughout our history from then to now. You talk about what happened in 2020. how divisiveness was created. But the thing that struck me was when I get to the part about our love for socialism, the love affair we have with socialism, this is a thing that history has shown us. And we've had a number of callers dial up this show that have read, and I've talked to even neighbors when I lived in Florida, who all knew about what the Nazi Party did to take over Germany and the fact that socialism has never worked anywhere it's been instituted. But yet everybody thinks that socialism is going to work here. They're trying to deliberately demoralize people that are right thinkers. And this is something that you don't make light of any of this stuff. You've taken a serious twist on all of this stuff, even citing the fact that you can't fix stupid. And the thing is that people, I hate to put our country or our listeners into a position here where they feel compromised. It's always about solutions on this show. And anything that we can do, we have people right now stockpiling guns, stockpiling weapons, ammunition, and food. And we have shows on here teaching people how to grow vegetables and raise chickens and raise rabbits for meat. And to be self-sufficient because of this fear we have that our government, because of the government overreach that you've talked about, are we wrong in thinking this way to try to get back to the way things were, how they were before, and to take on these moral turpitudes and concepts that Washington promoted? We can't be wrong for doing this. We're going to end up, I have a feeling, fighting for what we believe in.
No, I don't think we're wrong, Dave. And here's the criticism, right? Because I think that when we are developing our worldview, now I'm 51 years old. I have a worldview. I have a way of looking at the world. But one of the things I try to do, and it's very difficult to do, is to remain objective about why I think what I think. And in the way that I do that, this is my personal thing. The way that I do it is I always try to consider what the objections are to my worldview. And if I encounter an objection to my worldview that I think either exposes weakness in my worldview or discounts my worldview, then I'm willing to change my worldview. And so kind of here's the criticism from the other side. The other side, and I don't mean other side of the aisle. I mean ideologically, morally, that side. Those, you know, if you've got multiple camps of people across a varying, you know, degree of morality and beliefs and ideology. I'm talking about people that are just diametrically opposed to me, right? The argument is, well, you just want to go back to a time that you think is perfect when black people were just a third of a person and we hated Irish immigrants and all these other things and the Trail of Tears and all of that. That's not what I am talking about when I say we need to revisit certain things. I don't look at America's past as this pristine, you know, like everything our forefathers did was the best and greatest and brightest. But the overarching narrative is what I'm talking about. And so, no, it's not wrong, Dave, to want to get back to a place where people had more control of their lives instead of less. It's not wrong to want to get to a place where people had more freedom from the federal government than less freedom. It's not wrong to want to teach people who have, you know, who need to be weaned, for lack of a better term. And that's a very descriptive term, Dave, but we have a generation of people that need to be weaned off of social services, right? And to teach people how to grow their food, teach people how to do for themselves. And so, no, I don't think that's wrong at all. In fact, I think it's necessary. I think that, I've never been accused of being the smartest person in the room, right? But I'm also not the dumbest person in the room. And I think that if you can track our path, there's no way that this country can survive the path that we're on. We can celebrate political victories. Oh, my guy's in office. Whew, safe for another 4 years, right? But the next 4 or 8 years, the other side is going to be, And I think we're just going to continue down this path. And I say this in the book. I say that eventually they're going to say, give us your guns. Eventually they're going to do it, Dave. Maybe not my life. Maybe my son's life, right? I've got five kids. My oldest son is 22 years old. Oldest daughter's 23. And she and I like to go to the range whenever I visit her. She lives in North Georgia. But one day they're going to knock on my daughter's door and say, I'm sorry, give me your gun, right? And I think when they do that, like, we've let them do a lot of things. We've let them tax churches. We let them tell us that we couldn't go to church during a pandemic. We let them tell us that, we have to pretend that men are women and women are men. And if somebody thinks they're a man or a woman, we have to pretend along with them in order to promote free speech. We've let them say all these things to us. But I think as soon as they come and they say, okay, give us your guns, then the 300 million firearms that exist in the United States is going to be put to use. And, Dave, I am not saying that because I long for that. I'm saying that because you can only push good people so far. So I don't want to see good people pushed anymore. I want to see good people prevail. I want to see us understand how to learn from failure like Washington did at Monongahela. I want to see us develop a set of convictions. I want to see us voting for integrity over political party. I want to see our corporations hiring people of character and integrity. And I want to see our country and this next generation live with courage that being virtuous and doing the right thing, even when it's hard, is the path forward for our country.
Well, that's a good thing, and I hope it comes to that, not the history repeats itself, and those who are ignorant of it are doomed to repeat it. Bob in Missouri, you are on the phone with Richard Raines. Go for it.
Yeah, Richard, have you ever heard of the Geneva Bible?
Yes.
That's what George Washington was reading when he came over here from 15, you know. You know what his prayer was at the very end, just to give you a clue about George Washington? He says, bless my family, friends, and kindred, unite us all in praising and glorify thee in all works begun, continued, and ended, when we shall come to make our last account before thee, blessed Savior, and hath taught us thus to pray our Father. Now, here's one basic thing that would cure a lot of our problems right here. For any people coming to this country to do a Pledge of Allegiance, and there's the word God in there. That God doesn't apply to Hinduism, Muslim, any other religion, only to Jesus Christ, okay? So they'd all be up to leave, okay? That's a Pledge of Allegiance. They can't pledge that because all these people are bringing in there, they hate this country, you know, especially the Islamic groups, you know? They're not coming in here to be buddy-buddy, so they deleted that from what that should be for citizens coming in here because we're being invaded. And not just from the ground, through the air, too. No one ever talks about that. The immigration coming through here, through the air, so-called legally. And, you know, you got to identify your enemy. You talk about stuff that we didn't know. There's forces that have been doing this over 100 years trying to destroy this country. And one of the main ones was in 1933, you know, the Frankfurt School. You ever heard of that before?
That's new to me.
Oh, my God, man, check out that, the Frankfurt School in Frankfurt, Germany. There's a group of psychologists were brought over here by Rockefeller and all the, you know, Dewey and all the other communists to subvert the schools, okay? They're putting all leadership roles in Yale, Harvard, and all those other schools. And this was a deliberate plan. You got to know who your enemy. And one way to discover, this was talked about in the past, you know, one of the easiest ways to discover who your enemy is who, you know, who you cannot criticize, those are the people that rule over you.
That makes sense, Bob. Yeah, we appreciate that, Bob. It's one of these things. This is what multiculturalism does to a country, and that's all part of what we're seeing in Britain and various other places that embrace socialism. This is exactly what you're pointing out, and this Frankfurt School is all part of that. Richard, we have some of the smartest listeners on this show that have done an insatiable amount of research. Bob, thanks for your call. The Show Me State is showing us a few things this morning. Rita in Missouri, you're on the phone with Richard Raines. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Doing fine. Thanks for asking. What's on your mind?
Okay. Okay, I have just a few, and I'll be real quick about it, and I'll say, point being, I have visited several of the eastern states of the 13 original colonies. And this is what I'm referring to a lot of is in Article 6 in the Bill of Rights about the Constitution, about the freedom of speech, petition, press, assembly, and religion. Point being, all those points being freedom from away from the rule of the Queen of Europe. And the second one, our well-regulated militia to bear arms shall not be infringed. And because originally they had to use their arms not only to hunt for food, but to hunt for food and to protect their land with. Another point, no unlawful force quartering of soldiers. They used anyone's home for the soldiers. And the laughing point here is every place that I went, Washington slept, they would take over people's homes so that they could quarter the soldiers. Another point, our person papers that affect secure against unlawful searches, especially using the NSA tactics. Another one, our rights listed shall not disparage all other rights reserved to the people. And the next one, our powers not delegated by the Constitution reserved to states or the people. Point being,
now you're talking the 10th Amendment. That was all about what abortion, that victory in Roe v. Wade being overturned. That was exactly what it was a victory for the 10th Amendment. And see, I believe that the court tried to do the right thing there. I'm sure, Richard, you'd probably agree with me. But, Rita, it sounds like you got a laundry list going here.
Yeah, and my very last point being about that, the powers not delegated by the Constitution reserved to the states or the people, not federal using states' law authority to make them federal, like the inspector generals of the post office. They made them all federal. And some of the police, they tried to tell them they could use federal laws to enforce law enforcement. Okay, that's my speech for the day.
I appreciate that, Rita. Thanks so much. Richard, boy, she reflects a lot heavy on the ideals that Washington was. I think our founding fathers were afraid of that. What's your take on that? You think she's right on about all that?
Yeah, listen, she quoted from the Bill of Rights and from the Constitution. And so, you know, here's where it all boils down, right? My focus is George Washington, his virtue, and part of the case that I hope to be able to make in the future as a result of this book is that, and we probably don't have, you know, a ton of time to really explore this, but you can come to this country and you can live here and you can live freely and you can participate in our republic without being a Christian, whatever that means, right? You can define that however you want to define it, but to espouse Christianity, you don't have to be a Christian. There's no litmus test for anything. But I do think that there is a strong historical argument to make that the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights only really works when you. It was built in an environment where Christian ideals and Christian ethics were the predominant expression of ethics and morality and virtue. And so if you placate Christianity, right, if you try to be even as secular as Thomas Jefferson was, I don't know how much you know about Thomas Jefferson, but he was basically a theist. Which means he thinks that God just got the world spinning and now he doesn't care what happens. He's just watching it all. It's his movie. He's just watching it. But even Jefferson realized that you really couldn't have this country without those specifically Christian, Judeo-Christians, Christian morals and ideals. And so when you begin to secularize, then it makes it more difficult to understand the value of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So I'm not saying we all have to be Christians. What I am saying is that if you were to come in here and you were just to overnight replace the predominant religion in America, which is Christianity, if you were to replace it with secularism, secular humanism, or Islam, or Baha'i faith, or anything else that's sort of removed from Christianity, you have a very difficult time keeping the Constitution and keeping the Republic together. And so that is part of that story, right? Whether you agree with it or not is, you know, that's another discussion. But you can't really, you can't divorce those two, Dave. You can't say, okay, here's the Constitution, which is a secular document, but that Constitution was framed from a Christian perspective, meaning not theologically, but from a moral and a virtuous and an ethical perspective.
And that's one of the most important things. I think even Bob brought that up, too, is you can't just go around screaming Allah right. Akbar. You know, it just doesn't work like that. If you don't believe in our founding fundamentals, how can you even swear allegiance to the flag and our Constitution if you've got misplaced, you know, visions that are basically illicit for this country and what it stands for? So, Richard Raines, we appreciate you being on the show. This has been some pretty intense conversation. And all you callers out there that jumped on this, we appreciate your input today because that adds more dimensions to what we're talking about here. The name of the book is Finding Washington, Why America Needs to Rediscover the Virtues of Her Most Essential Founding Father. It's 132 pages. I have the book here. I'm reading it. We read through it. And it's one of those things. We wanted to bring that up because of Independence Day and everything that we stand for here in America. This is your opportunity to stand and fight for what you believe in, folks. Richard Raines, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And go out and get the book. In the meantime, we will be back tomorrow for fun, excitement, news, and discussion of world events and what's going on here, how we can change our world. In the meantime, God bless you, and God, the Father of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, bless America.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.